Tired of complex and high credit card processing fees? It's time to simplify. Whether you own a big business or a small startup, Empower Payments can save you money. Streamline your payment process while saving money today with Empower Payments. Learn more at empowerpayments.com. That's empowerpayments.com.
2 Minute Drill brought to you by our friends at Hen House. It is a great time, always a great time to get to Hen House. You want to do a little dinner tonight and not have to do any cooking, let the delicatessen do it. They've always got a different meal every night of the week for a family of four for just $20. I'll tell you what, things get busy. You're running all over the place. It is nice to be able to just roll over to Hen House and take advantage of that meal that is ready to go. You can also get back to the meat counter, take advantage of some wonderful specials. Always great specials back at the meat counter. Of course, certified Hereford beef. You want to get some steaks on the grill, and who doesn't? How about some T-bones? They're $8.99 a pound. Porterhouse steaks, $9.99 a pound. Going to do some ribs. Got a smoker, and you want to get the ribs going. All-natural pork loin baby back ribs sold in Cryovac. Buy one, get one free right now at your neighborhood Hen House. And, of course, the Harry's Brewery. Always great specials on the national and craft beers. So take advantage of it right now. One of the specials going on, Bud Light 24-packs. You can get it for $17.99. Great deal going on right now. Your hard seltzers, your beer, it's all at the Harry's Brewery. Go get it right now inside your neighborhood Hen House. See all the specials and more at henhouse.com. We start the drill in Charlotte, North Carolina. Travis Hancock, WFNZ, is up first. Travis, how are you, buddy?
How are you? I need some Hen House. I need it delivered here to Charlotte. You did a good job on that. I need some food here, man.
Listen, they're absolutely the best. 97 years they've been serving Kansas City. We're not giving them up. No thank you. I apologize. And if you want, like, my family starts usually either Saturday or Sunday morning. One time the kids are always like, let's go get donuts or let's go get bagels from the bakery. So I should throw some love out there. The cakes and everything, the cupcakes, they're wonderful as well. So anyway, Travis, let's start with, you were the guy who tipped us off, what, 2+ weeks ago that you thought it was over for Roy Williams. He kissed the court his last time and everybody down there. This didn't come as a surprise when he retired, and I don't think it came as a surprise that Hubert Davis was hired. He would figure to be a strong candidate. Is it the right choice, though?
Yeah, that's the question I had, and you're right. It wasn't a surprise. I mean, it was a little bit of a surprise in a sense, but it wasn't a shocking surprise to us here based off reading the tea leaves. But as far as the hire goes, that's also not a surprise. We know that Carolina loves to use the word family to keep things in the family. That's what they always do. And, you know, I don't know if it was the right hire or the right hire that was within the family that Roy Williams wanted them to make. You know what I mean? Was this a exhaustive search where they – did they ask all the big names? Did they check on – I mean, not that they would necessarily do it, but did they check on Brad Stevens? Did they check on Mark Few, Jay Wright? I mean, you're Carolina basketball. Did you go through every possible way to get the biggest name coach? And then you could always work your way back to Hubert Davis, to Steve Robinson on the bench, to Wes Miller. Did you have to hire Hubert? I know it's a different time period because of the transfer portal, but I thought it was a really quick hire. And maybe Hubert was the hire the whole way. Maybe when Roy walked away, that was the guy no matter what. But it was a very, very quick hire. I know that some alumni likes it, some doesn't. We'll see. It might be the right hire for today, but is he the right hire long term? That's my question.
Yeah, and that is the big question. And if he is the right guy, if he wins championships, nobody's going to care. But to me, the guy that they swing and miss on is if they didn't take a shot, and maybe they did. And, you know, Chris Beard ended up at Texas, which is his alma mater. But I kept saying, look, the guy you call, the only guy who's at a pro, Texas Tech as a program, I'm sorry for both Red Raider fans here in Kansas City, it sucks. Okay, it's not a good place to be. So he would go anywhere, in my opinion, that was a better job. If you gave him enough money. And so if you're North Carolina, listen, I'll be drinking later, but not now. We heard from down in
Penthouse.com. There you go, pal. I got you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we'll go get some Coronas over there. Colby Gordon told us from down in Austin that Shaka was out too. He called that one for us like a week plus in advance. So if he knew that, if Austin knew that, then the basketball community knew that as well. So Chris Beard, you had to know Texas was going for him. It's, you know, Roy seemed to sit around just long enough to make sure that Chris Beard was in place. But It doesn't matter. You had to know Roy was going if you're in North Carolina because you knew Travis. And you had to know Chris Beard was available. That's the guy that they should have, in my opinion, thought long and hard about hiring. That's the guy I would track if I was a Carolina fan against Hubert Davis.
And I think what you're saying is the best, most attainable guy, right? The guy that's most likely to come there. Because let's be honest, Jay Wright and Mark Few, they're not leaving what they have built. Jay Wright's building a statue in Philadelphia. Mark Few's not getting off of his fishing off seasons in Washington. So those guys aren't leaving what they're building there to go follow Dean Smith and Roy Williams, who already have legacies there. But a guy like Chris Beard, you're right. To me, Chris Beard, pound for pound, X's and O's wise, what he gets out of his team, he might be the best coach in college basketball right now with what he has to work with. I picked him to go to the Elite Eight this year, and I was, of course, wrong, but just because I thought he could manage his way through a bracket. So you're right. And it was kind of odd that you bring it up, too, that it was like the Roy Williams news happened, and then Chris Beard was hired, within the same hour, whatever that was?
Yeah.
So yeah, it was almost like there was some jockeying for position there of some sort. You're right, because you take Chris Beard over Hubert Davis, I don't care if you're family or whatever, if you get a chance at Chris Beard, you bring that guy into North Carolina. Absolutely.
Yeah. All right, the Carolina Panthers bring in Sam Darnold. A lot of people tell you, look, Tannehill got so much better when he got out from under, Adam Gase. I get that. That's good thinking, and that's the positive approach I would have towards Donald if I were a team. Like, hey, listen, let's get him out of purgatory and let's try to coach this kid up, because there was a lot of talent there when he came out of college. Are the fans buying into that?
It's really split. You know, my perspective is I'm a media member in Charlotte, but as I've mentioned before, I also am a lifelong Jets fan. So I had the perspective as a Jets fan, but yet having to deal now with the people here and their reaction to Sam Darnold. It's split. I think you would agree. It's probably split in the media, too, when you watch all the shows and hear the audio and you see some guys love Darnold, some guys don't. It's a very, some people go the side of it's all circumstance, and it's Adam Gase, and it's the weapons. And some people say he's a gunslinger, and he's not that good. I don't think they gave up a lot. They didn't commit a ton of money, and I think it's worth a flyer at 23 years old. Look, I know better than anybody how horrifically bad that Jets organization is. And no young quarterback had as much going against him his first 3 years as Darnold did. First of all, he's a 20-year-old, laid-back California kid going to the pressure cooker of the Big Apple at 20 years old, quarterback of the Jets. That's pressure enough. And it's the Jets. They're horrible. He's got Adam Gase in year two. He gets mono. He has a terrible offensive line. In year two, end of the year, they go 6-2 the last 8 games. He's 13-4 with touchdowns to picks. They started to really make some progress. And last year, the organization just gave up trying. They let Robbie Anderson walk to Carolina. They had Frank Gore. Frank Gore's my age. I've been out of high school since 2002. They had Braxton Berrios, Jamison Crowder, Denzel Mims, Rashad Perryman. They did nothing to help Darnold. So, yeah, he struggled, and you can't fully defend what the stats are, but there's a story behind the struggles. They did nothing for him last year. When you have a 37-year-old running back, God bless Frank Gore, he's a Hall of Famer, but in 2020, that shouldn't be a 23-year-old quarterback's main weapon back there. So I think he's got to improve, but there's a lot to that Jets story that you can't just look at through the numbers.
No, I agree wholeheartedly. All right, do you like what else Carolina's done? A.J. Bouye brought in. Do you like what they've done this offseason? I know it was going to be an empty feeling if they didn't make some kind of move at quarterback. So now they got that spot filled. Overall, you like the moves?
Yeah, they got Hassan Reddick from the Cardinals, defensive end that played under Matt Rhule at Temple, who's, he's only on a one-year, $6 million contract, which is kind of crazy. They got Denzel Perryman from the Chargers, small contract. A.J. Bouye, you mentioned on a – I didn't even think I saw the details of the years yet, but they got him on a small contract. Matt Rhule at Temple and Baylor feasts off these guys that have a chip on their shoulder that are doubted, that have something to prove. They may have had big contracts down the NFL like Bouye did, but he's being doubted. He's struggling. Hassan Reddick is angry he didn't get a big contract. So the players that Matt Rhule kind of goes for – yeah, he loves the big name guys, but he goes for those guys like Robbie Anderson when he was at Temple. He goes for those guys that sort of are a little bit angry, a little bit mad, want that next deal. He sort of feasts on those guys. So I think they've done a nice job with the roster. Now, they've got to figure out the left tackle because at this point, you might be the left tackle. They might call you up and they say, hey, you're doing radio, but you're the left tackle this season. That's how bad it is here. So they've got to figure out the left tackle, whether it's Sewell in the draft. But, you know, if they can get a corner, if Darnold plays fairly well, they get a left tackle. They've got a son, Reddick. They've got Boye. They've got some other pieces they've added. Dan Arnold, the tight end from the Cardinals, who's like 6'7", a big red zone target. I think they've done a nice job. I think for year one for Scott Fitterer, the GM, I think they've done a fairly nice job. A lot of work to do, but without spending a lot of money, they've done a nice job.
Travis Hancock in Charlotte. Great stuff as always, buddy. We appreciate it. Have yourself a great weekend.
You too. Anytime, my friend. Appreciate it.
She said the prettiest place on earth was Baltimore at night.
Glenn Clark Radio in Baltimore, Maryland. Glenn, how are you, buddy?
I'm great, brother. How are you, Saran?
Doing really well. And, look, I don't know if everybody in Baltimore likes this, but I'm glad Mark Turgeon got an extension. I think he's done a good job, and I think he deserves it. But I'll bet that I'm not going to hear that's the reaction to him getting, what, a five-year deal and all kinds of built-in activators that can keep this thing rolling over, adding a year as he moves forward. What's the reaction to this contract?
Yeah, you nailed this, Saran. Look, the guy made five tournaments in 6 years, and it would have been six tournaments in 7 years, and you don't fire coaches. It's happened twice in those circumstances where, you know, with Rick Barnes at Texas and Steve Lavin at UCLA, that it wasn't about scandal, it was just about performance. So they weren't firing Mark Turgeon. That wasn't happening. The question was whether or not they would give him an extension with 2 years left. They did. And depending on how you look at it, you can really read into what it is. Essentially, it prevents them from firing him next year. The cost would be entirely too much for them to fire him next year. But it doesn't really do a lot beyond that. It you could read into it as really being like, we're guaranteeing that you're going to be the coach for two more years. We need you to win something at that point. So there are people within the university that are not in Mark Turgeon's camp that are a little bit more reluctant in buying on. The money people that support the program are very much in Mark Turgeon's camp. He's going to be the coach. He's brought in a couple of decent transfers to try to – he knows. He's got to win. Like, there has to be – and when I say win, NCAA tournament win. They've got one win in his regime over a power conference team in the NCAA tournament ever, and that was this year against UConn. They have to win in the NCAA tournament, or Maryland's going to have to make a decision a couple years from now.
Yeah, and I think, you know, you can read through all those different things. Win the Big Ten, adds a year to his contract.
Yep.
Win the Big Ten tournament, adds a year to his contract. Get to the Sweet 16, adds a year to his contract. Get to the Elite Eight, adds a year to his contract. Now, it should be pointed out, it can never go beyond 6 years, so he's not going to end up with, like, you know, if he has two great years, he's not going to end up with 12 years on his contract. He only gets a $200,000 raise from 3.1 to 3.3, but he gets $100,000 every year after that. So I think those things are there, but he hasn't done any of those things, right? He finally,
right,
last year was co-Big Ten champs, and co-champ would have gotten him an extra year. But the real thing is, you mentioned all those tournaments, only one time to the Sweet 16. He's only made it to the second,
yep,
weekend once. That's what he's really got to do, is at least make like an Elite Eight run like he had at Wichita.
Exactly right. And Saran, that's the difficult part about having the Mark Turgeon conversation, because I don't think anybody around here is inclined to dislike Mark Turgeon. He's never embarrassed anyone. He's a good person. He says the right things. He does the right things. He makes appearances. He does everything right. This really is about one thing, and that's that he inherited a standard in which in the 10 years before he arrived, Maryland won a national championship and an ACC tournament championship and made another Final Four on top of that. That was the standard. Now, Gary Williams was an exceptional coach. He's a Naismith Hall of Famer. Was that a fair standard? Maryland had never done those things, really. I mean, it's a little bit under Lefty Driesell, but that's not really the standard that Gary Williams inherited when he got here. So it's a tough thing that Mark Turgeon is being, you know, he's certainly being viewed in that prism, whether it's fair or not. And in that prism, what's missing is postseason success. Even the one Sweet 16 run we talked about, they got to play Valparaiso and Hawaii in order to get there. They didn't have to play anybody. They got to play two double-digit seeds. He got his first ever win against a single-digit seed in the tournament this year. And again, it was a seven-seed UConn. So those things are real, and they're tough, and it makes the conversation very difficult because I don't think people hate Mark Turgeon. It's just the expectation is to win games that matter, and they just haven't done that.
Trey Mancini gets a standing ovation as he makes his return from cancer. That had to be a very special moment.
Absolutely. Great to have fans back, you know, all throughout baseball, and certainly was great to see that. Trey Mancini, speaking of, you know, of individuals, he's beloved here. He really stepped up even before his cancer diagnosis. Everybody knows the Orioles are going through a rebuild process, and he absolutely took on the role of being the face of the franchise. He connected with people in the community that really matter. He befriended a young man named Mo Gabba, who was the most beloved Orioles fan there was. They became best friends before Mo passed away last summer. Trey Mancini is an absolutely beloved figure even before any of this in this town. And so, yes, what he went through over the course of the last year, his determination to get back out on the field, it was a special moment. He is a special individual. He's a really good baseball player. There is this fear now among a number of Orioles fans that, you know, this is still a rebuild that we're talking about. And if Trey Mancini hits a little bit, there's some fear that the Orioles end up trading him this season, which will be a very difficult pill to swallow for a lot of people. But in the meantime, absolutely wonderful to have him back out on the field.
You mentioned the Mo Gabba. By the way, I'd encourage people to go Google Mo Gabba ESPN.
Yeah.
They did a piece this year on him with the Ravens, a young kid that just an incredible one. If you love the great stories, unbelievable. I mean, I was standing in my kitchen in tears watching that story. It's just unbelievable. So I'd encourage everybody
to take a look at it. You know, I got to know Mo a little bit, Saran. It's hard to even talk about him without breaking down, man. He's one of the most unbelievable human beings I've ever crossed, and I appreciate you saying that, man. I would love for everybody in the world to know his story.
Absolutely, and you guys in Baltimore did such a great job. I know he was a frequent caller to the Sports Talk, and you know, hats off to all you folks in Baltimore there. I got nothing but love for how you guys do things there. That was great. I'm getting a little choked up just thinking about the kid.
We got blessed with her. Yeah, dude, it's tough. Saran, the day after he died, I couldn't get through the show, man. Like, I just couldn't do it.
He was the most
powerful individual we've ever come across in our town, and it's really kind of you to say those things.
Yeah, absolutely. So I encourage everybody to go look it up. One more for you. I don't know. I probably shouldn't. Yeah. I should probably just break. But Adley Rushman, you know, we've got the kid who went to Bobby Witt Jr. here. Rushman went in front of him. What's the timeline on him being with the big club?
I'd be surprised if we didn't see him before the end of the season. I do think that the service time thing matters, so I think it'll be September, and you know, then they delay a little bit next year when they would bring him up. But I'd be surprised if we didn't see him. He's also, you know, you keep in mind that Bobby Witt's a high school kid, Adley Rutschman's a college kid, and so the advanced age thing, being the number one pick, he needs to get up here to start that clock to get towards making money. So I would be surprised. Everything that I know, everybody I've talked to, unless once they finally do start playing minor league baseball, unless he completely is a disaster, and boy, that would be the most troubling thing for this organization that you could ever imagine. Unless that's the case, I'd be stunned that we don't see him before the end of the year.
Glenn Clark, Glenn Clark Radio in Baltimore. Great stuff as always, buddy. Have yourself a great weekend and stay healthy.
Saran, the same to you, my friend. Always appreciate you.
And in Phoenix, Arizona, we drank way too much Corona.
Luke Lipinski, Arizona Sports 98.7 in Phoenix, Arizona's next. Luke, how are you, buddy?
I'm good. How you doing?
Doing well. Doing better than the Miller family. Archie and Sean Miller both let go within about 3 weeks of each other. Listen, this was not a shocker, right? 2 years ago, he did a press conference where it sounded like he was basically waving goodbye. So I don't think anybody's stunned by the developments, but why is the timing in Arizona's mind right now, or the correct timing now, as opposed to last year, 2 years ago, when some of the things came about with the FBI investigation?
Well, I got to be honest. I mean, that's a talk topic we've been discussing on our air here too. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense to a lot of people here. I mean, if you knew you were going to move on, you know, probably better to do it a little bit earlier. It sounds like they just wanted to stick by him as long as they could, and you know, he was a good coach, but you know, U of A has that sort of pedigree where they expect to be in the Final Four at least every once in a while, and he could never quite get over that Elite Eight hump. He got him to the Elite Eight three times, but I think just everything factored together, they finally said, okay, enough's enough. But I said this on the air the other day, it's almost like you're playing poker and you don't have any cards, and you're just bluffing basically all the way down to the final cards come out on the flop, and then you give up. You know, so that's sort of how it felt.
Yeah, that's a great analogy. Let's get a bunch of money in the pot bluffing, and when we clearly have nothing. All right. Yeah, I like that one a lot. Well done. Well done. All right, who's next? Who do they go? Who would be the popular hire? Who do you think that they will end up with?
It seems pretty wide open. I know Damon Stoudemire's name has been thrown out there. I mean, Mike Bibby's name has been thrown out there. Tommy Lloyd from Gonzaga, I think, would be probably the most popular choice, just because, you know, he's involved with a program that is routinely a national title contender, even though they couldn't quite get over the hump and win this year. You know, but also, depending who you talk to, it sounds like that might be the ultimate heir apparent to Mark Few in Gonzaga, so maybe he's not a real option. You know, there's talk of maybe they swing for the fences and even try for a guy like Mark Few. I don't think they would get him. I don't totally know why they would. But at the same time, maybe you just go all out and then kind of work your way backwards from there.
What about Chris Beard? Like to me, if you get after this early, like what was the, like what happened over the last 3 weeks? You know, I mean, the season was done. Why didn't this happen earlier? You could have been all over Chris Beard. I had someone tell me, you know, if you'd have made this move right away, I had someone say that Chris Beard would definitely take the Arizona job if it was offered. Now, I don't know if that's true, but, you know, and hell, knowing his past, maybe to taking it for a week and then left for Texas. He did do that to UNLV, had the UNLV job for a week and then left for Texas Tech. So maybe it would have been a repeat of that. But why not get that done quicker and get out there after the top coaches? In particular, to me, Chris Beard, who was the prime candidate to get to a program with a lot more history, tradition, and frankly, basketball juice behind it.
No, I mean, I think it's a great point. And as far as your question as to what happened over the last 3 weeks, I don't know, and nobody I've talked to really knows why. I mean, there's this thought that maybe because the women's team was going so deep into their tournament and they ultimately made the national championship, maybe they didn't want to take the spotlight off of that. But I respect that to a certain point, but, you know, there really is no answer to what changed over the last 3 weeks in terms of Sean Miller in particular, other than you probably did miss out on some names. Now, I know they think that for the most part they can get almost anybody they want within reason, you know, that's available, but I just don't know why you'd limit yourself the way they have.
Yeah, that's puzzling. All right, the Suns, second in the West. Are they a Western Conference Finals team? We know the Lakers are banged up right now. If they get healthy, they're going to present a challenge. But do you think this is a team? Should Suns fans finally, you should certainly expect them winning in the first round, but is this a team that can battle to get into the NBA Finals?
Yeah, I mean, I think they're capable of it. You know, it's sort of like March Madness. It comes down to what your path is. And you know, with the Lakers being as beat up as they are, that kind of throws a wild card into everything, because if the Lakers finish sixth or something and you end up as the third seed, that's a pretty tough first-round opponent. And there's going to be a pretty good team that finishes third, whether it's the Suns or the Jazz or the Clippers. So, you know, if their path to get to the NBA Finals goes like Lakers, Clippers, Nuggets, then they're going to have a hard time. I don't know if they can pull that off. But definitely there's a way where this breaks, right? I mean, I think in a seven-game series, and it's funny because if you had talked to anybody here 12 months ago about this, it was like, just try to get into the playoffs, and if you win a game, that's awesome. Now it's like there's not really a team I think they fear in a seven-game series where in the back of their mind, like, we're probably not going to win this. I think they can legitimately expect to win any of them. Now, to be fair, I mean, the Lakers at full strength, Denver's already been a problem for the Suns. They haven't beat the Clippers yet, so there are certainly teams they could lose to, but I think they're in any series now.
All right, the Cardinals have been super aggressive this offseason. J.J. Watt, obviously the biggest headline of the bunch, but also Rodney Hudson in a deal with the Raiders to get one of the best centers in football. I would assume the thinking here is, look, Kyler Murray, rookie contract, that's when you got to get it done. And so they are pushing hard on like about a 2-year window to try to, you know, fully find out what they got in Kyler Murray and how far he can go, because they're only 1 year away from having to give the big contract. It's after year three that you got to pay these guys, right? You tack on the 3 or 4 or 5 years on the back end of their fourth and fifth years that's left on the rookie contract. So is this about one, all in on the that rookie contract window? Is it all in on trying to find out exactly what Kyler Murray is so you know how much to pay him, or both?
I think it's definitely trying. They're all in on Kyler Murray, but I think there's a lot of truth to that. Okay, right now he's on the rookie contract. We got to go all in. I think there's also a sense of, you know, we got to see what we have in Cliff Kingsbury. And there's some things that he's done very well, but also he comes in with really no NFL experience, certainly on any level in terms of coaching. And they got to know if this is a guy that, did they hit their ceiling last year, or is their ceiling like 9 wins in a season? Or is this the guy that legitimately could coach them all the way to the Super Bowl if Kyler Murray becomes that guy? You know, I think it's a combination of the two. And like even Steve Keim, I think he's sort of going all in for his own job. I don't think he's on the hot seat right now. But if this team misses the playoffs again, especially with the moves he has made, there's going to be questions. Like I said, I don't think they would hit Keim quite yet, but I do think they would hit Kingsbury pretty hard.
Yeah, interesting. Luke Lipinski in Phoenix, Arizona. Great stuff, buddy. We appreciate it. Stay healthy and have yourself a great weekend.
Sounds good. You too.
Talk a little Royals baseball as we come down the stretch run, second half of the program here. Thanks to all the guys on the two-minute drill. David Leske brought to you by our friends at Corona. Corona Light, Corona Premier, and the Corona Hard Seltzers. Four flavors of the Corona Hard Seltzers. Perfect for a beautiful night like tonight. Zero sugar, zero carbs. That's the Corona Hard Seltzers. Get it wherever you buy your Coronas. David, welcome to our T-Mobile guest line. How are you, my friend?
I am doing very well. How are you?
You know, I was better at 3-1. I was better at 2-0.
Yeah, I was better.
Yeah, you know, I was better before four consecutive games with three runs or less. But as we stated in the first segment of the program, had you told me before the season started, 6 games in, you'll be 3-3, I would have taken it. So how should I be right now, in your opinion?
Yeah, I mean, that's probably about right. This is an average-ish team. I tend to think they're slightly on the wrong side of average, not terribly too far that way, but, you know, 3-3 is probably about right. And they beat up on a bad Rangers team, and they are probably pretty evenly matched with the Indians, and that took them to 3-2, and they lost to a team that's better than them. And then they're 3-3. So it's kind of where I expected them to be at this point. I think they'll probably take one game. If they play both games in the next 2 days, I think they'll probably split them and head home right at .500, probably, again, where they should be. So, you know, you hope for more when they were 2-0, but it's also, you know, 6 games out of 162. It's hard to – it's all we have, but it's 6 games. You know, how much can you really glean from any of that, really?
Yeah, we always overrate what's going on. We're just past the, you know, we're what, 5 minutes into the third quarter of the first Chiefs game. If it were an NFL season, based upon the length of the season, the baseball season. All right, let's start with Brad Keller, though. Where's your level of concern for how Keller looks?
1 to 10, like 8.5, maybe. The thing that gets me is, I mean, I said this last week. You weren't here, but. I was a little bit concerned that he might be hurt because of the way he didn't use his slider. He threw harder, you know, all that stuff that you tend to see sometimes with guys who have elbow injuries. And then they pushed him back a day. And once I had the concern in my head and they pushed him back a day, there was literally no way you could get me off the thought that he was hurt. It's just, it's not possible. And then he goes out and he looks like he did in the first inning, and you think, okay, well, there's no way he's not hurt. And he looked a little better in the next couple innings, not a lot. The command was really bad. I don't know. I don't know what's wrong with him. I don't know that if he knows what's wrong with him. It's not great. And, you know, you're at the point that you maybe wish he's hurt a little bit to explain it, but he didn't seem concerned with injury after the game. Of course, I don't know that he would have come out and said, yeah, my arm's barking. He says he needs to attack hitters more and all that. I don't know that he knows where the ball is going when it comes out of his hand. And I don't know what the fix is for that, but they theoretically have a couple days to figure it out. And you know, if he's bad again, and I think he'd be up against the Angels probably. I think he'd pitch that Wednesday game against the Angels there. It's a tough lineup. And if he doesn't have his command against them, he can get rocked again. And then you have to start asking questions. You know, do you put him on the injured list, even if he's not really hurt, just to see what's wrong?
Yeah, mental health day type of thing?
Yeah, I mean, give him a reset or something, because I've never seen him like this, and that's what's so concerning. He's had bad starts. I mean, he's a big league pitcher. He's going to have bad starts. It's never been quite like this before, especially not back-to-back starts. So it's concerning, and I don't know what the answer is going to be. But like I said, if it's bad again on Wednesday, you have to think about maybe doing something about it. Now, if he pitches on Wednesday and he looks great, that's probably even more of a good omen because of the Angels' offense. So I guess it's a double-edged sword there, but I suppose we'll have to wait and see how he does next time out. If he even makes that start, I'm not convinced he'll make that start.
Yeah, no, I'm with you, and there seems to be a lot of smoke around that maybe there's an injury there for him. Now, it is different, though, for the Royals right now in the standpoint that they've got some pitching depth. We know they've got good young guys, you know, theoretically, I guess, over at the alternate site right now and soon, hopefully, in the minor leagues, so that they can go to if they're not grabbing some, you know, 4A, you know, pitcher, some major league has been, the guys that would seemingly get the call will be guys with stuff. And, you know, let's be honest that, you know, there's a lot of talented guys breathing down the necks. I mean, Brad Keller's never struck me as a guy who's going to, like, wilt under pressure, but that is one other scenario, right? The Jacob Junis realized, I'm not just going to be given 6 years to try to figure it out, to hopefully figure it out in the sixth year and go out into free agency. I've got to get this figured out now. And he and his brother went to work and got it figured out. I suppose there's a little bit of like, hey, he's not handling the nerves part of the game well, but we'll see. Let's wait and see if he makes that next start and go from there. But we have been talking about Jacob Junis. Alec Lewis wrote a great piece about the work he did with his brother. Now his brother's kind of becoming a pitching guru, if you will. You know, that was great to see. That gives me a lot of confidence. Do you believe that this is real and not just like, okay, he's got a new pitch, but once they start prepping for that new pitch, they're going to start knocking him around? Do you think that this is, you know, that maybe Junis has turned the corner and we're talking about a 5-year or 10-year starter in the big leagues here moving forward?
Well, the precursor has to be that the Indians' offense is really bad. I mean, they're brutal. Now, the Royals couldn't get around Jose Ramirez, but if you can get around Jose Ramirez in that lineup, you're probably going to be fine. They didn't, of course, in the bullpen. But all that said, he looked really good. I thought the cutter was an impressive pitch. We didn't see much of him in spring training because I think he pitched in one of the TV games maybe. And so you get to see a short burst there. He looked great coming out of the bullpen for, I think it was Saturday and Sunday, he was out there against the Rangers. Looked really, really good there. this is the sort of thing that until he fails, you got to believe it because he hasn't failed with it yet. Now, it's not a ton. I mean, it's 14 innings since spring training started. But I think he's walked two guys and struck out something like, he had 10 in 7 innings in spring training, had 6 on Wednesday. I think he had 3 out of the bullpen, so 19 strikeouts, 2 walks. I mean, that's a good ratio. he's getting big league hitters out. And, I mean, there always is the concern once people have seen it when we just don't know how he's going to fare, because I think we saw what happened when the league started to figure out, okay, sit on the fastball, don't worry about the slider. But I think the cutter – what I like about it is it's close enough to the slider that I think it's going to make the slider better also, because, you know, hitter has to, this pitch kind of has similar movement to it, but the cutter is going to be harder and not break quite as much typically. If he can get that tunneling and all that down that the big league pitchers work so hard for now, it's going to be hard to figure out which pitch it is. And if you say, okay, I'm going to swing because I think it's a cutter and then it's a slider, it's a swing and miss. Today I'm going to take it because I see a slider and it's a cutter. It's a called strike. And I think that will help him moving forward. I'm tentatively buying right now on Junis. I think the nice thing for me, at worst, I feel like he's a really good bullpen arm, which is valuable. But I do. I think he's a guy who could take it and run with it in the fifth starter spot or, you know, depending on what happens with the rest of the rotation, third or fourth starter spot. But I was really encouraged with what we've seen from him. And not just Wednesday. Like I said, spring training, the two relief outings, everything. He looked just really, really good, and it's hard to argue with it.
Danny Klinkscale was talking about the fact that, you know, Danny Duffy will have these kind of games. So he's not ready to say Duffy's, you know, found something even more, taking it to another level. And I'm with him. I agree. And I actually thought, and I'm a big Danny Duffy fan, anyone who's listening to the program knows that. I actually thought he had a number of loud outs with guys on base, you know, some hard hit balls right to gloves that could have made that start look different. Would have made the start bad. Wouldn't have made it a crappy start. It just wouldn't have been the six shutout innings that it was. But, and again, full disclosure, right? I'm a fan, so I'm rooting for the guy. I got him on my fantasy team, like, for the umpteenth year in a row. And this time for a dollar, so I would love for him. There is something to be said. The one thing that I will say on where their ceiling is, lefties will develop late. Like, Cliff Lee did not become the Cliff Lee you think of that was Cy Young caliber Cliff Lee until he was, like, 29 years old. Now, I think Duffy is 30 or 31 now.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, so right in that range. So this would be even later. So I'm not going to project a Cy Young type of step up. But, you know, he really doesn't have that many innings for how old he is and being a high school draft pick. Take me away from, you know, the trampoline I'm ready to jump on and spring into the air with excitement on Danny Duffy maybe finally becoming a top of the rotation guy.
Well, all I heard from you is Duffy is Cliff Lee 2.0. So we're no. I think you're on to something. I think you and Danny both have a Danny Klingsfield, not Danny Duffy. I don't know what he's probably pretty confident in himself. I think there's merits to both arguments. Duffy, he puts up these starts every year. I mean, we see it from time to time every single season. And I think you're right. There were some loud outs. But at the same time, he has a really nice four-pitch mix. And I wrote about this. The biggest thing for me is the velocity just craters in the middle of games for him. And it didn't happen on Monday afternoon. Now, it's his first start of the year. His arm is pretty fresh from not pitching a ton last season. So I'm curious to see what happens when he makes this start in June, if he can still hit 94 in the sixth inning against Framil Reyes. I don't know if he will or won't, but at the same time, when you've got the changeup he does, when it's on, his slider and curve both are really good swing and miss breaking pitches. He's got enough of a repertoire to be able to maintain and to be able to carry it throughout the season. There's always injury risk. He's always good for, you know, 2-3 weeks here and there on the injured list, if not more. But when he takes the mound, the other thing that he's never been bad in the big leagues outside of his rookie season. I mean, he's always been fine. I think we may have actually talked about this last year too, that even bad Danny Duffy is fine. He's not the worst. He keeps you in games. He gives you 5-6 innings a start. And so I think there's a really high floor there at the very least. But yeah, I mean, if he can conjure that veteran lefty magic that we see a lot. You see, I mean, it's not just Cliff Lee. Jamie Moyer is a guy who pitched until he was 104, and you know, he didn't really figure it out until he'd been released three times. So there's a lot to that, I think, with a guy like Duffy, and I think that he's. You know, I thought he would be better served in the bullpen. I'm not completely off that, but I feel like he's a guy who can maybe give you 20 to 25 solid starts, keep you in games. Every so often, there's going to be 6 or 7 shutout innings in there, and you live with that. The problem for the Royals is he was their ace. When he's your 3 or 4, you're okay. When he's your best, you're terrible, and that's what it comes down to. And hopefully he's not their best, because then they'd be terrible probably, but I don't think he is. I think he's the 3 or 4 this year, and that's where he fits really well.
David, I've done a really bad job of managing the clock all day with all our Masters coverage that we're doing. I hate to cut you short, but I'm going to have to do it, man. We will do it again on Friday, and we will carve out more time, because I've got a whole – I got through like a tenth of what I wanted to get through, so I apologize. Inside the Crown, where you can see David Leskey's great work. He's got a great piece up there on Nicky Lopez, all his stuff. Make sure you're on the mailing list. It's great stuff. It's Inside the Crown. David, appreciate it, buddy. Have a great weekend. Stay healthy, my friend.
Sounds good. You too.
All right. We'll take a break. Come back. You're in the program.
All right. The Good Sense End of the Hour answer. Who was the last team in Major League Baseball to play a game without striking out once at the plate?
I would play dumb, but it's the Kansas City Royals.
September 7th, 2017, there have been 12,182 team games played since then. Not once has there been zero strikeouts.
Yeah, that was back with the Hosmer and the Kane and the, you know, the crew that won the World Series where they were really good contact hitters. You know, they'd swing and miss, too, or they would not get on base. They wouldn't take a walk is what I meant to say. But, yeah, they could put the bat on the ball. There's no doubt about that. That is an amazing stat, by the way. We were playing for Good Sense. You can get Good Sense on your way home, goodsensesubs.com. Make sure you're part of the loyalty club. You get 10% back. That's a great loyalty club. Founded in Lenexa, Kansas, locally owned and operated. Good Sense. Check it out tonight. On your way home, need to know. Coming up next, Kevin Harlan in the 5.
All right, before Justin Rose, how many golfers had a 4-stroke lead after 18 holes of a major? Brought to you by Joe's Kansas City Barbecue.